Welcome to Stoma and Continence Conversations from Coloplast Professional. I'm Paul.
And I'm Karen. We know stoma and bowel and bladder issues impact the lives of those that you care for.
We're here to support your educational needs and help you in supporting your patients.
We're talking to fellow healthcare professionals and experts by experience to discuss the latest hot topics in the worlds of stoma, continence care and specialist practice.
Hi, and welcome to another Coloplast Professional podcast. If you haven't heard any of the previous podcasts, please go have a little look. They're out. They are available at coloplastprofessional.co.uk. The NHS is forever changing, and that is what we're going to be talking about today with my very special guest, Charlotte Shepherd. She's going to be talking us through and guiding us through possibly some of the biggest changes the NHS has been through since its inception. So, hi, Charlotte. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Paul? Thank you for inviting me.
No trouble at all. No trouble at all. So just a little bit of an introduction from yourself, just so the listeners could kind of understand what you actually do and why you've got your finger on the pulse of the NHS.
I've been with Coloplast for nearly 4 years now, and my job title is Strategic Partnership Manager. And I cover the whole of the west of England, so all of Wales, Birmingham, and down to beautiful Cornwall. And really, my role is predominantly looking at primary care and community provision of ostomy care specifically, although my role does cover all the areas of chronic care. And I look for gaps in pathways where ostomates are not receiving the support that they probably need. And I work with anybody in the NHS who can help to fill those gaps, to stop patients falling off pathways and then becoming the lost ostomates that we all know of. It's something that was important pre-COVID, but certainly post-COVID with the workforce workload issues that the NHS has, it's a really important role, and there's never been a greater need than now about looking for where patients are falling off their pathways.
Brilliant. And I think, you know, it is so, people like yourself are so vitally important. I think it's having the ability to look from the outside looking in, because I think sometimes I used to find it when I was in my departments, sometimes you need somebody external to kind of look in and go, have you thought of this? Have you thought of that? Look at this. Because sometimes, you know, you could be quite blinkered. You know, sometimes it's difficult to see the wood for the trees. And sometimes you do need an outside person to look in and go, have you thought of this? Or how about that? So as I said at the start, I think it's quite a good day to be recording. I'm not going to, I'll let you say it. So I think it's happy birthday. It's not neither to me or you. It's the NHS. How old is it now?
74 years old today, 5th of July, 2020. 22? Yeah, 74 years old today, same age as my dad.
So yeah, happy birthday NHS and happy birthday your dad. So, so Charlotte, as I say, today we're going to be looking at the potentially one of the biggest changes that's happened to the NHS. And I know that you've been working closely with a lot of people. I know you've got some really good examples. So please answer this golden question. ICSs, what are they?
I personally think they're one of the most brilliant changes that the NHS is going through right now, because it was set up originally to provide treatment for acute illness. So you had something that was urgent that needed to be treated. The NHS was there for you. But that we've changed as a population now, and we are all getting lovely and old. We're living with long-term conditions, and the NHS hasn't been set up for that. And what that means is that we have got, even before COVID, massive workforce shortages and workload increases. And the current figure is something like 100,000 whole-time equivalent staff vacancies in hospitals. And people, obviously, they try to manage their own conditions, but fundamentally, we all end up at A&E and there's massive pressures there. So in 2019, the long-term plan was published, bearing in mind this is pre-COVID. And this was about trying to find ways of doing more with less with the NHS. Things like setting up NHS 111, setting up urgent treatment centres, and setting up social prescribing, which is all really good. But it's only for the NHS. And the thing about an integrated care system, so the ICS, is the integration of all of the care agencies. So this is the police, this is local authority, this is mental health, this is, you name it, everybody now should be involved. Because what we know is that it's not just about your medical issue, it's the wider condition of your life. So it's our homes and our financial resources. It's our opportunity for things like education and employment. Have we got access to public services? What's our environment like? Are they building too many houses near the motorways? All that sort of stuff that's got the biggest impact on health and well-being. And just relying on the NHS to fix that, it's not fair. And there aren't the people. And there isn't the funding to be able to do that. So bring us all in and let's all look at it together.
One big united front. So I think that's, you know, it's brilliant, brilliant way to break it down. So thank you for that. But if we can kind of just put it down now, obviously the majority of the listeners are specialist nurses or people who work in the acute area, acute and community. Are there going to be any big changes that we're instantly going to be able to notice? Because I know that the ICSs are coming in, they are in. Are there going to be any big changes that people are going to be able to witness quite early on?
If an ICS is working well, think of it as a spider. I literally Googled how many eight-legged creatures are there in the UK. We're going to go with spider. But if you look at the eight legs of the spider, the body is the ICS. It's trying to do what it's doing. It's got this kind of global look at population health management. Now, within that, the eight legs will be the acute trust, so our acute nurses. It will be the local authority, so local government. The ambulance trust who are feeding into our acute nurses, community trusts, so any of them going out and doing community clinics, charities, which I think will be a really big thing for us, for the nurses, the CCG, which, by the way, they all became dissolved at the beginning of this week because ICSs are now the legal term, primary care and mental health trusts. So if there is, for example, if there is a pathway where the nurse at the coal face, at the edge of seeing that patient, about to discharge that patient from the acute, and that nurse knows that that patient has got mental health issues, and in the past would have had nowhere to refer that patient other than back to their GP, what there should be now is an active charity on that ICS board, an active mental health provision, an active mental health trust, who will just automatically be there. The doors will be wide open. They can be popped into that patient pathway so that that nurse has someone definite to refer to. That would be a live example of how it might work. A more holistic view of where an ICS has really worked. This is in my neck of the woods. This is down in Devon, and it's a really gorgeous example of where the integration of the different multi-agency care system was used to improve people's outcomes. And it's weird, for the first time, rather than talking about outcomes for patients, I'm finding myself talking about outcomes for people, or actually people are saying outcomes for clients, because it's not always the medical issue that is the problem here. And in Devon, they pulled together, so the NHS, social care, local councils, businesses, voluntary and community groups. There's a lot of expertise, and they set up something called the High Flow Project. And they basically found that there were 15 people who were highly complex, and they had multiple needs, and they were frequently accessing services, but they weren't accessing services that were necessarily the most appropriate for them. I mean, in this instance, it was A&E, but it could so easily be phoning the stamina nurse every single week because they've got a problem. The end service that they got to, that ambulance call out, wasn't the most appropriate. So what they did was, rather than having a multidisciplinary team, which was primary care and secondary care and community care, it was a multi-agency team. and they could look at the issues that caused the crisis that then led to that ambulance call out. And it's no surprise to you, it's no surprise to me. The majority of the time, that was not a medical emergency. So they found these 15 very vulnerable users of A&E with complex needs. And the high-flow caseworkers, who are, in my head, similar to the social prescribers that we're seeing a lot within primary care, they provided this really intense, personalised support for individuals, and they produced these bespoke plans that coordinated all sorts of different supports. So things like helping them attend their counselling appointments, finding them housing, giving them advice and guidance on budgeting, even things like form filling. How do you fill in forms to get what you need? It really wasn't just about the presenting issue that they came in the ambulance with to A&E, but more recognising all the other factors that were going on in their life and what was mattering, what mattered to them. And by doing this, interestingly, they reduced the use of these 15 people's use of A&E by 60%. Big number, you don't hear that very much. I don't hear much in my job. And these people spent 9% fewer days in hospital, and it wasn't to do with their medical care. They ended up, when they evaluated the project, they showed that people had improved housing stability, they had a better financial status, their family relationships were better, their living conditions were better, the homelessness was reduced. And the people that found this, the people that were having to deal with it, were the A&E staff. But it's unfair, isn't it? It's unfair to put that on them. They don't have the capacity and they don't have the skill set. Why would they? They're skilled in other areas. They save people's lives. So that's a really beautiful example of where the integration of the care system in Devon has really supported these 15 people.
I think it's an absolutely amazing example of actually giving the correct care at the correct time. You know, it's, as you said, and again, you know, for a lot of the stoma nurses out there, and I always used to, you know, have it that when I used to see people in clinic, they'd say I'd come in, you know, they'd come in saying they've got really sore skin and they're having leaks. And I've used this example on previous podcasts where, you know, somebody would come in, they're saying they're having the leaks, they're saying they're having sore skin. They come in and the skin's absolutely perfect. The skin's absolutely fine. There's nothing at all wrong. And they say, well, I haven't actually had a leak for the last 2 days. And then, you know, I used to take that on the chin and go, that's absolutely fine. It's really good that we're doing it. But, you know, is there anything else you'd like to talk about? And that's when these other things would come up. It would be, you know, financial concerns, other concerns, all these concerns that really I didn't have the capability to deal with. And the hardest thing and the thing I used to hate about that, for want of better words, was not knowing who, or knowing that it would be a fight for me to get that individual, that referral that was needed, that extra care that was outside of my area of expertise. And it sounds like this is almost the golden egg that we've kind of been looking for, these ICSs. And I've been in the NHS a few years now, and I've seen lots of things come and go. Are ICSs here to stay?
I think it's a really good question. I've been in the industry, I think, nearly 25 years. And I've seen font holding, I've seen PCTs, I've seen CCGs, you name it. It's all, you know, we've seen it. And the latest thing in primary care is the primary care network. Well, those of us that have been around a long time will know that that is very similar to font holding. And when you look at how it's actually going to work in real life, ICSs are looking after like a million people. They are huge, big geographical areas. And that's being broken down into place-based partnerships. And the place part of the geography is pretty much the CCG footprint. So the mechanics of how it's going to work at a local level is probably not going to change that much, because we know that that works. Yes, the right people might not be in that geographical area able to support patients or people, clients, That's really the only change, because from a practical point of view, geographically, places will be managed in the same way. I think it will stick around, because I think that, like you say, when you're a nurse or you're anybody in the NHS, you've got your expertise, but you don't have anything beyond that. And it's not practical to upskill a stoma care nurse on mental health. But it is practical to knock on the office next door, in the building next door, and say, hey, you there with the expertise, can you come in and help me? We now work for the same organisation. And part of the management within the integrated care system is to remove competition amongst trusts. So in the old days, they used to compete, didn't they, and have different tariff prices and all of that sort of thing. That's going to be removed. That's not going to be how it's going to work. And we're going to have, a bit like we did in COVID, what did they call them? The dirty sites and the clean sites, where you have the elective and then you have the emergency sites. And that means that in one place within an ICS or in an ICS, you have the emergency sites doing all the emergency stuff, not competing with the elective sites doing the elective stuff. So the changes are subtle when you look at the management of the NHS bit within it, because fundamentally a lot of it's going to be the same. It's more about who's being brought in to support those pathways. When I've talked to nurses about this before, one of the things that comes back is the whole digital agenda, and that before COVID, the long-term plan set out these, what was seen as very ambitious ideas about getting a 33% reduction in outpatients over the next 5 years and making digitally enabled both primary care appointments and outpatient appointments, just have it mainstream that it was all done virtually. And yes, COVID has accelerated that. It has. But when I speak to the stoma nurses that I speak with, a lot of them will say, that's all very well and good, but there is a huge proportion of the population that the stoma population overlaps with who are not digitally enabled. And also, like you say, how do you assess somebody's skin virtually when they don't know how to access it? And I hear that a lot, but I'm going to give you another, can I just give you one other example of where?
Always. I love a good example. I do love a good example.
I really like this one because I think this is really scalable and I think it's something that could be done anywhere. And it's not an area that I cover, I just read about it. But in Southeast London Integrated Care System, they basically said, right, okay, so we're going to go with all of this digital agenda. That's fine. But how do we upskill Joe Bloggs to have this? Because it's not necessarily about skill. It's about the financial ability to have the technology within the home. They call them clients with severe mental illness and learning disabilities. And what they did was the CCG at the time, the local authority of Bexley, Bexley Health Neighbourhood Care System, the local voluntary sector, they all worked together to secure £60,000 worth of money. And then Mind and Mencap delivered a pilot to improve vulnerable people's access to healthcare. This was an ICS project. And Mind set up the non-clinical peer-led monthly group that people went to. Online webinars were held by GPs and the local mental health teams talking about self-care. There was a digital health skills training network where clients got referred to and they had one-to-one digital training on site. Any question they had, anything they wanted to know. They carried out mental health first aid training to all social prescribers and GPs. And when the primary care networks, when the hospitals, when the ICS, whenever any new website has been developed, Mencap have ensured that it's got really good accessibility by making easy read web pages and easy read health information. So the digital agenda is very positive. Then on the other side, there's a problem that a lot of vulnerable people won't have access to that. So then that's where, again, the ICS can really come into its own and make sure that those people can have access to it and therefore it will work.
I think that's two amazing examples there. One of really quite focused on 15 individuals and the other one, which was dealing with a massive population, which could do it. And I think that is the power of the ICS, is to be able to focus it down into a really specific, quite a small problem in a focused area to a much greater population to support that greater population. And I think that is an incredibly powerful, and it's a system that kind of makes sense. I know it sounds strange when I say it makes sense, and you think to yourself, why wasn't something like this done years ago? Why is it only taken now for it to come through?
But you know what, Paul? I think people were doing it in the NHS. I think it did exist. It just wasn't formal. And it wasn't laid down in that this is the way we're going to do it. Loads of people would have been doing this stuff already. If you look at academic health science networks, their job was to bring all this sort of stuff together. It just wasn't formal. And I think every nurse that you speak to would say, oh, yes, I've got a really good link with a particular GP surgery, or, yeah, I've got a really good link with the mental health team at so-and-so place. I think that nurses will see that the digital agenda will support them in their roles. I think that's the hope, but I don't think it will be just as straightforward as we all thought it was. But, you know, if we can tap into the people that do know how to do it, and we should be able to, because they should be there with open arms saying, yep, we're here, this is our job, then hopefully it will happen more quickly.
And at Cold Class Professional, we are always big fans of top tips. We love it when things can be kind of distilled. And I love putting all of my guests on the spot when I say top tips. So if you could kind of give three top tips to a clinical nurse specialist when it comes to ICSs, be that working with them, be it how to best utilize them within their service, have you got any top tips for working with ICSs or how to interact with ICSs?
I would say, especially within stoma, shout and ask. And the infrastructure should be there right now. These ICSs became a legal entity this week. And if you are able to look at your pathway and say, right, where are my gaps? Or give your coloplast SPM a ring, whatever. Let's find the gaps, because where they are, there are people now that work alongside the clinical team, alongside the NHS. The NHS doesn't have to do it all by itself anymore. And if you shout, you can find that the voluntary sector, that the different trusts, that the local authority, they will all be there to support you to fill the gaps in your pathway that are making your patients not have the care that they need. And it doesn't all fall on your shoulders.
I think that's it. And I think that's a brilliant thing, is it's like as clinical nurse specialists, we're so used to things landing on our shoulders. Things always seem to land on the CNS's desk. And I think having that ability to say, I need help, and can you support me in this? And Charlotte did just there say, you can always talk to Coloplast about it. If you did want to get in contact with anybody, just for that support, somebody from your area, then you can always drop me an email at cprofessionaluk@coloplast.com. And that email address will be in the podcast description. I'm going to kind of quiz Charlotte after this as well, and there'll be some really helpful links also in the podcast description just to help guide you through some of the ICSs as well, which I'm sure Charlotte's got some really good resources that she's going to be able to share with us as well.
There's some really nice little videos that NHS England have produced that explain how it works and give live examples of where it has worked. So yeah, we'll put some of those on the podcast notes.
That's absolutely brilliant. Thank you. And I know from my point of view, as I say, ICSs, I've heard about them a lot. They've been on the wind for a while. And I did know about ICSs purely because I do a lot of reading. But I think the way that you've broken them down, you've broken a lot of the myths about them. And for me, I think I've got the same probably not as much passion as you about them, because I've spoken to you in the past about ICSs, and you literally do bounce every time somebody mentions ICSs. I think hopefully you've set a lot of people's minds at rest. So before we do wrap up, is there anything else that you feel that we need to know about ICSs, or is it just a case of enjoy and run with them and let's get them involved in Stomacare?
Yeah, absolutely. That is the thing. Let's get Stomacare on the agenda. And Stomacare, yes, it's a small prevalence rate. The numbers of patients are tiny. But when it goes wrong, it affects so many different parts of the care system that we have. It needs shouting about. So let's shout about it.
Perfect. Shout, shout, and shout again. And if there's nobody to shout at, just shout louder until somebody happens.
Yes.
So, Charlotte, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I hope you will be a guest on the Colourpath Professional podcast in the future. I'm sure there's something that's going to crop up, and I'm going to say, I know the lady that's going to be able to support us in this. So on behalf of all of Colourpath Professional, and specifically myself and the listeners, I'd just like to say, on this very special day of the NHS's 74th birthday, I'd like to say thank you very much for joining us, and have a good afternoon.
Thanks, Paul.
Stoma and Continence Conversations is brought to you by Colourpath Professional. To learn more, visit colourpathprofessional.co.uk.